everybody. Happy Valentine's Day. I'm Rob.
I'm Tammy.
I'm Emmett.
And I'm Emily.
And we are the Love Dorks. This is our Valentine's Day pilot special. We're thinking that Meet the Love Dorks is maybe going to become a podcast, but we'll see how it goes today. We're here to just talk about relationships and love and romance, but today, Emily, you sort of came up with the theme for today.
Love on an island.
Love on an island.
This is the laboratory experiment episode of this podcast.
How to find it and how to keep it. So that's what we're going to be doing today. But first, I wanted to talk about how Meet the Love Dorks got started because, Tammy, what do we call that booth at the Mean Queen? That's sort of the booth that's...
The exile booth.
The exile booth.
Facing the wrong direction.
Or the consultation booth.
The consultation booth, yeah.
And Tammy, you and Emmett and I were sitting in that booth really just like 2 or 3 weeks ago, and we were chatting about relationships because we don't talk about anything else.
That's true.
Ever.
That's, yeah.
You know, given
it's
the
very accurate.
The world situation and politics and all the injustice in the world, and all we literally talk about is love.
I mean, if more people only talked about love, the world situation might be better.
That's a good point.
Episode two.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, so we're in the booth and the server comes over and she's like, you guys are really deep into it, aren't you? What are you talking about? And we say love, you know, and relationships. And she goes, oh, I just got engaged.
Right.
To that guy sitting over there at the bar. You know, he didn't pop the question then, but you know what she meant. She was just like, she's recently engaged.
Mm-hmm.
And we instantly shot back at her. Well, we've been divorced 4 times.
Between the three of us.
Yeah.
And, you know, her face kind of paled a little bit. But we immediately, you know, stepped back up and said, but we believe in love. We really do. And I think that's probably why we're sitting here now is because we believe in love. And she said, well, did you have any advice for me? And we said... know your rights under the law and don't sign anything. Anyway, so that's how it got. We should bring her into the show sometime to see how it's going.
And they asked me to join to target the millennial demographic.
That's right.
I'm here simply as a hook.
We think you're the wisest person, actually. That's why we...
You don't have any divorces or marriages.
My baggage is very
credit.
Light. It's true.
But
I can be Charlotte in the Sex and the City of 4.
Are we episode 3? Which Sex and the City member are we?
Okay, we can go there, but I'm going to have to do a lot of binge watching to catch up on Sex and the City. Anyway, but we did bring you in, Emily, so we have a demographic spread here because you're in your 20s, Tammy's in her 30s, Emmett's in his 40s, I'm in my 50s, and in that big Venn, those big Venn circles. You know, we overlap in the middle when we have questions about relationships and love. So, and everything in the outer part of those circles, that's the experience that we're kind of shining in on our overlap. Maybe I should post this diagram.
I feel like, I feel like a diagram is
I think our symbol is like a four-leaf clover Venn diagram of a kind.
Maybe.
We could form it with our hands.
Okay. But we're here to help. On Valentine's Day, and we actually have a guest who we're going to help right now. Erin, are you there?
I am. Hello.
Hi. Welcome to Meet the Love Dorks.
Thanks for having me, guys.
How are you enjoying your Valentine's Day?
Well, following tradition of watching action movies and drinking beer. So pretty good.
Erin, tell us a little bit about yourself. How old are you? What do you like?
Okay.
What do you do?
I'm Erin. I've lived in Sitka for 3.5 years. Before I was here, I was in North Carolina at grad school at Duke. And before that was growing up in Minnesota. Right now I'm working for the National Park Service, but I've also done some other nonprofit stuff in town, usually of the tree-hugging variety.
Nature lover. Got it.
Yep. Dirty hippie. Well, I'm fairly clean, but I'm a hippie.
All right. And how's it going in the old romance department?
I would call that a cackle.
Can we put that laugh in the intro?
Interesting. So when I moved up here, I had a boyfriend who was originally intending to also move up here. He was going to grad school for master's in teaching, and he was going to finish up this semester and then come up to Sitka. And he chickened out.
Wow.
After I had moved up here, so oof. And so that started things off to a great start.
There's got to be a name for that, like the bait and switch. Yeah, let's go to Alaska.
Yeah.
And then you
yeah.
show up, you know, at the ferry or at the airport, you know, alone.
Yep. Yeah. Especially common yeah. in Alaska.
Especially coming here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hmm. Here, I've met so many amazing people, and I have so many friends that I really resonate with and really love to pieces, but that's been it. And it's also the thing of, I don't know, of being on an island that you don't want to burn any bridges. It's just, I guess, with different personalities. Like, unless you, like, axe murder my grandma, like, I'm probably still going to be friends with you.
Wait, what do you mean by that?
What?
The burn bridges problem.
I just know people who, like, if they date someone... or have any sort of more intimate relationship with, if they break up or something, you know, doesn't go as planned, it's kind of, I don't know, they hold on to that part and they can't continue being friends, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's like, do you risk trying something more with a friend and have it go south and then it has to be the end of everything?
Right,
I guess that's kind of
the population numbers don't make it easy.
Yeah,
if you lose that one friend.
No,
at some point you're going to see that person
at the back door.
At the back, yeah.
Right, probably.
Oh,
often.
Yeah.
Yeah. Probably
without
the next
a doubt,
day.
You're going to see him
yeah.
again.
Yeah.
Especially if you have mutual friends, you're going to probably be hanging out together at some point, and then
everybody here has a mutual friend.
Yeah. There's no 6 degrees of separation.
Yeah.
It's like 0.5 degrees.
Yeah.
Anyway, do you think that this is something that you could negotiate at the beginning of a prospective relationship? I mean, could you sit down and say, I think we could hit it off, but listen, if it doesn't work out, do you think we could part as friends?
I think you probably could. Yeah, I mean, communication is usually a good thing, and that would be part of
Emmett's it. Emmett's wrinkling his nose.
I think I've maybe gone on a handful max of like actual like let us go on a date. We shall go to a place and eat the food and drink the drinks and have a date, whatever, where you would have that conversation. I feel like most of the time it's, you know, a couple too many shots at the pee bar. And I'm sure you have a very great, really intense, drunken conversation, but seriousness and anything like that never really comes up.
We need to talk without you just a second. Stay on the line.
Stay on the line.
And we need to discuss a few things, and then we'll be right back with you.
Okay.
But can I just say, what would you say is, like, your main thing? Like, the thing you need us to try to help you with?
I don't know. How to branch out.
How to branch out
like, from friendship.
On an island.
Yeah, I feel like I'm so close to the friends I have here that I like do all the things with them all the time, but therefore limit myself in all the other people I could meet, which could be friends or whatever.
Stay on the line, Aaron. We'll be right back with you.
Is this branching out to new people or branching out with the people that you already
know? It sounds like new people.
Potentially. And people who maybe you didn't consider as suitors and candidates
before. Who are friends.
Right.
Yeah, it seems like it could be both.
But her observation about the risk is real because on an island, you really don't want to generate that many bad feelings. I mean, you want to be able to try and connect with people and try. I mean, the search for intimacy is kind of universal. But the risks are so high, and Sitka is such a compact little environment that your exposure is so high if it doesn't work out.
I have a thought on that, though, which is that because we're all stuck here with each other over the long term, I actually think that you might have a better chance of working it out with the person, you know, maybe not next week, but long term because we're all stuck. In other words, in a city, if bad feelings were generated, you know, you could go off to your world, the other person could go off to their world, and you don't really have much impetus to work it out with them because you're not going to run into them. But here, you might actually have more impetus to figure it out, and you could take that as a positive, encouraging thing, like, well, maybe things might get awkward if we break up for a while. But in a year or 5 years, we could actually be friends again because we have something invested in making that happen.
That's the way it should be.
Yes.
But people are people and not always as mature as we think they should be.
That's true about all of our relationships here. Right. And if it seems like something worth at least considering as you consider the options for intimacy here, that maybe it's not the case that your only possible outcome if you break up is mayhem. Like, there is also another possible outcome that you could be friends long term. Like, it's not, that's not guaranteed. It's never guaranteed. If you made the agreement that you were talking about at the beginning, where you're communicating clearly, it's not like you are guaranteed that people are going to stick to that, right? Like, nothing's guaranteed. Well, but it's possible.
You could at least ask, you know, can we light the fire without burning the house down?
Yeah, and I also think that the person that you'd want to be with, that you would even consider, would be the, somebody that's mature enough and communicative enough to have that conversation. Like, I wouldn't even want to consider somebody who wouldn't
right.
be able to, like, move on past the most awful of scenarios.
Kwong, what are you thinking?
Well, I think two major roads that diverge are our intentions for what's going to happen and our feelings and what actually happens. So that's all fine and good. But people can say they want things in the beginning, and it always could follow the script, or it will not. I think, though, what Erin's saying is she's trying to find a way to meet people outside of her social circle. And one of the smartest things I've ever heard anyone say about Sitka was written by Sitera Perez after... Sitera Perez is a barista at the back door, and she wrote this really beautiful Facebook post about how everyone in Sitka has their 300. It's their set of 300 people they see over and over and over again, and you're in a laundry machine where you're recycling these people through your life, and you actually don't very often break out of that 300. And that's a possible cause for why it's so hard to meet people, because even within an island, there's islands within the island. Mm-hmm. And furthermore, there are very few social events that truly mix people across different kinds of interests and socioeconomic backgrounds. And there's all these people you could possibly click with. Even people who've lived here for 30 years do not know every single person.
Right.
So there are so many people you don't know who you never interact with. And Sitka increases your chances of finding them because it's such a small place. But every time there's been a big event where people have really mixed is when I've always met people and thought, like, who are you? I've never even, you know, seen you before. You don't go to the back door. So there are different kind of spheres within Sitka. And Erin, it sounds to me, is like trying to find a way out of her sphere rather than work on a relationship with someone who she already knows. I think she's exhausted possibilities and she's looking for something totally new.
So what? Should she go online? Should it be Match.com? I mean, how do you break out of your social circle?
That is the question. How do you break out of your social circle on an island?
Do you have to do something that you wouldn't normally do, like for fun, something.
I think so.
What would be like for the four of us, if we were like, let's have a night where we don't do something within our 300, what would that be?
Well, I think it also involves soft connections. Emmett, you introduced me to somebody on New Year's Eve at a party who I didn't know, and I think friends we can work the circles, each other's circles.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. A little bit.
Because our circles they're not the same circle.
Yeah.
Right.
They are slightly set off from each other. And if you can massage the soft connections, you'll eventually reach into some other place.
Yeah. So that might be a strategy for her. And the demographic data suggests another solution for Erin, too, that I'll pitch at her. But let's get her back on the line and talk about how she can maybe broaden her reach a little bit. Hey, Erin, you still there?
Yes, I am.
Okay. So, Emily?
I think Emmett really came up with the solution.
Oh, so I think what we've...
Lay it on me, Emmett.
Okay. Hey, Erin. So I think what we've come up with is it for you to find a way to broaden your Sitka community behind the sort of 300 people that we always see all the time and to maybe...
Yeah.
And either, like, do something that you wouldn't normally do or go somewhere you wouldn't normally see or have a friend who... might be sort of like on the outskirts of your 300 and then have them introduce you to somebody else who you might not know. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think it does.
And I don't know how to do that outside of the introduction. Like, if you're like, hey, Emmett, meet somebody new today, I wouldn't know where to go or what to do.
I mean, I think that I have done that in the last couple of months, not for romantic reasons, but just because for soul reasons or something, have just started thinking, like, what could I do that I want, you know? And I went to Ultimate Frisbee a couple of times, and I joined Silks, and I just did a bunch of stuff that I thought I would be uncomfortable at. I think that that's a lot of it, is you have to know ahead of time, like, I'm going to be uncomfortable because I'm going to go meet people that I don't know. And it's been great. And I've met, like, a ton of new friends that way, and have been uncomfortable a lot less than I thought that I would be, you know.
Okay.
And I think if you sense romantic possibilities, I think the guy for you, Aaron, frankly, is going to be mature enough, open-hearted enough, sensitive enough to hear you out when you say, I want to live in this town, even if we just end up being friends.
Yeah, I think that goes for everybody. Like, if that person isn't what Rob just said, then they're not worth your time anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's a risk. Yeah. But before you go, Aaron, I have some numbers for you and just one thought. So I crunched some census numbers. Sitka has 9,000 people. We all know that. So let's assume 4,500 of them are male. 35% of the people over 25 years old have a bachelor's degree. And college doesn't necessarily mean that you're a superior person. But I think for you, it just suggests this person is, you know, looking outward and into personal development or whatever. Take it for whatever it's worth.
Yeah.
In Sitka, the people over 25 years old, 31% are single. 52% are married. 11% are divorced. 6% are widowed. So if you add up the single, divorced, and widowed people, that's 48% of the people over 25 years old. Actually, 48% of the people over 15 years of age are eligible, but maybe not available. And so if we narrow this down even further, the data just isn't there. But because I work in news, I happen to know that we have 1,300 students in the school district. So if we just look at these 1,300 students as a sample, we know that half of them are male. So if you look at who's in school, you have people who are 8 to 18 years of age, and there's 650 of them. So I'm thinking this 8 to 18 or this 6 to 18 is like a 12-year spread that has 650 males in it. And okay. I think you could take this spread and probably apply it to any similar group of men who are within 12 years of each other.
Mm-hmm.
So it could could be 18 to 30. It could be 30 to 42. You know, I'm just using the school district as a way to find the number of males who are in a 12-year spread. So assuming that there's 650 guys, you know, eligible but maybe not available in your 12-year spread of romantic possibilities, again, 48% of them are available. That's 312. 35% of them have been, you know, to college, so that gives you 109 guys in your pool.
109. That's a very bleak number.
That's not a good number at all.
And now the critical thing for you.
Rob, you're not making me feel better.
I'm sorry. It gets worse before it gets better.
You know, 70 of them.
And so we're down to 109 guys within a 12-year range. There's this idea of compatibility of temperament. You know, when you used to get divorced in the old days, you know, they had to find some reason. They had some grounds for breaking the contract, and it was adultery or whatever. Nowadays in Alaska, when you get divorced, the judge has to establish incompatibility of temperament in order to dissolve the contract. So the opposite of that, when you're looking to get into a long-term relationship, is this idea of compatibility of temperament. Now, Tammy, you mentioned Ultimate Frisbee.
Yes.
When I'm looking for sort of a subset of people who share common interests, you know, love of the outdoors, fitness, that kind of thing, I think of the roughly 30 people who I see out there playing frisbee in the snow, under the lights, and I think they have compatibility of temperament. I think compatibility of temperament is when you sit down, Aaron, and you're talking with a guy and you share a lot of the same interests, you share a lot of the same loves, you've listened to similar music, some of the books you've read are good, or you like talking about books. That's, you know, that's compatibility of temperament.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, you know, there are 30 people out there playing Ultimate Frisbee.
Right.
So of your 109 guys, let's just say for the sake of argument that 30 of them have compatibility of temperament with you. So we're down to 30. Now, Tammy, it's the idea of chemistry.
Yes, chemistry.
Aaron's got 30 guys in a 12-year spread. There's this idea, you just hit it off or you don't. I mean, you feel it or you don't feel it, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
And who is that really going to be? That's going to be, is that going to be maybe even 10%? That you really just feel that tingling up and down your spine kind of thing?
10% seems like a very high number to me.
Well, 10% gives Aaron three guys.
I am highly
suspicious. Where are those three guys?
I don't trust this math at all.
Yeah.
At all. Because Aaron has found compatibility with more than three men in her time in Sitka. It just hasn't worked out for this and that reason.
Yeah, how come she's calling Meet the Love Dorks? I mean,
the odds aren't good. But it's not three. Aaron, I'm coming to your rescue. It is not three
I'm going to be on Team Emily and think that this is not good science.
Well, my suggestion was...
Or science.
For Aaron...
I want to do my own separate analysis.
My suggestion was for her to go out of town. Because if she went to Seattle and did like a fellowship down there, the population pool would explode.
Are you trying
to
leave me?
Yeah. So move and get really good at frisbee.
is the upshot here? The takeaway is
move and if you find somebody, some guy who's interested in Alaska, you've established kind of compatibility of temperament right there, and you should bring him up. So I'm saying you need to import.
Are we allowed
Okay.
I was just about to disagree with you.
That is a lot of effort to go through for love.
I will say it is a lot.
I'm kind of lazy.
I am poor.
I mean,
a
Aaron,
lot might not work.
I think the number Rob is homing in on is the love of your life, and he might not be here in Sitka. And there are many people who have left Sitka for that reason. So to ultimately meet the love of your life, it's true. You will probably have to leave Sitka. But that doesn't mean you can't find someone who is fine.
I'm going
to
disagree with everybody and think
and
that
not
you
have them be
don't.
Your, yeah, the love of your life.
Yeah, don't move. Stay here and be happy and it'll happen.
No, she wants to meet somebody.
I know, but...
She wants to meet someone special and he not be here.
I just disagree with moving to do that. Moving from an amazing place to do that?
It depends on what you want to prioritize at what part of your life.
That's true. What's most important to you, Aaron?
Well, at this point in her life, she wants to meet somebody. That's a priority for
her. I would like her to say that. Aaron?
Yeah, someone to have a meaningful relationship with and, you know, partner in crime, adventure buddy, not necessarily... till the end of our days.
So can we bump the number back up to 30 before we factor in
the
chemistry?
And then make it, can we just make it to 50 because science.
Because
of the science, yeah.
Yeah, science.
There's 50 guys out there waiting for you right now, Aaron.
That's actually, those numbers aren't terrible.
Yeah, go play frisbee.
Aaron is this very foxy, beautiful combination of derby player and brainiac. So those listening, you should give her a call because she is so great.
Aaron, thanks very much for meeting the Love Dork.
Yes.
And you can see
thank you guys.
Aaron, sometime in the future, we'd like to check back with you to find out how it's going.
Yes.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. Good luck to you, Aaron, and thanks again for sharing this special time with us. And happy Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's Day.
You too.
Okay. Bye, Aaron.
Why do fools fall in love? Why do birds sing?
All right, everybody, you're listening to Meet the Love Dorks. This is our first program. It's our Valentine's Day special. We're hoping to turn this program into a podcast about love and romance on our little island of Sitka. And we're also going to take on questions of larger significance. We just got done talking with a single person who's had trouble finding love in Sitka. I thought we should sort of go to the other end of the spectrum and talk with somebody who has found love and, in fact, just sealed the deal on New Year's Eve.
Congratulations.
Hi, Bridget. Are you there?
I am. Hi.
How's it going? You've been, married, for a month and a couple of weeks now, right?
We've been married about a month and a week.
And how's it going?
It's going great. We're really happy. Nothing really has changed other than we really are married. Because we've been living, we were pretty much living together even when we had two separate places, but we've been cohabitating, I guess, for a really long time now.
Bridget, can you tell us a little bit about, just say your name, your age, and then how you met your husband?
So my name is Bridget. I'm 30, and I actually met my husband. I was living in Boston, but I was working on a salmon tender in the summer, so I was teaching in Boston and then working on a salmon tender out here, and it was a crappy day, Port Alexander, and the tide's rolling in, and this little boat comes in, and this really cute guy just ties his boat up, and he's like, oh my God, hi. I was like, hi. And it was Isaac, and so I'm now married to Isaac. At the time, we got to know each other because I was one of the only faces that he got to see. Every few weeks he was sitting by himself, and so he was trolling out there, and other than going into Port Alexander and tying up, I was one of the first faces he saw on the tender. And then I said, hey, do you want to stay for dinner? And he looked at me with these really wide eyes and was like, I have a moose roast. And I'm like, that sounds great. It was really funny because when I first met him, I actually had to climb up to get up to the, it was the EAC, which is a power scow, and I had to climb up to go by my captain to go to the wheelhouse to do Isaac's fish ticket. And I looked at my skipper, who actually knew Isaac for years and years, said, man, I want that one. And my skipper's like, oh, no, you don't. He's a mess. And, it's funny because at the time I was also a mess. I was 24, just started teaching and kind of doing that thing. So it was really funny because I think when I instantly met him, I was like, ooh, I want that one. But it actually took us several years before we actually ever dated.
I think I have to say we should have told Aaron about the moose roast. We overlooked.
Right. He's a keeper if he offers. Moose roast.
Okay. I want to say that Bridget had the chemistry.
Yes.
Right off the bat.
Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Tammy.
Right.
You think
it sounds. Yeah. It sounds like it. Is that true, Bridget? Did you have chemistry right off the bat?
Oh, it was so funny because I met Isaac and I knew I met him and we would talk the whole time. I was buying his fish. We would talk the whole time I was doing his fish ticket. He was always talking to me. And every time we saw each other, it was just nonstop. Both of us just just talking. And I'm that way. And I always thought Isaac was that way. And then I had said, oh, yeah, Isaac, he's a talker, blah, blah, blah. And people were like, what? We didn't start dating until, 3 or 4 years after we met.
Huh.
And so we already knew so much about each other. And who we were and what we were about and what we did. We already knew so much about each other before we even started dating.
Were you cautious on purpose?
Well, I was living in Boston, and at the time, I was in a relationship, as was Isaac. So even if the connection, the connection was pretty clear to both of us, in later time to Isaac, but we both weren't really, I was living in Boston. I was living in the summer,
right.
And I didn't make that decision until actually a year or two to move to Alaska full time and not just be here in the summer. And then I was in Kodiak, and I was over there. And when I got the call that I got the job in Sitka, my first thought was, man, I really hope Isaac's single.
Wow.
We didn't start dating until I had been here for 6 or 7 months permanently.
Bridget, this is a tough question to answer, but thinking back on your dating success in Boston, what part do you think coming out to Alaska and finding a guy who was also into fishing, also into the outdoors, also into maybe some of the similar things you were, had to play in you finding love? Or do you think what part do you think luck had to play in it? Just pure, I just bumped into the right person.
I think it had to do with luck. But I don't know. My uncle always said I had to find a man who was a bigger man than me. And so I had to go to Alaska to do it. Because I did, I dated, I had a lot of boyfriends I was a long-term relationship girl. I guess I didn't have a lot, but I had always been a long-term relationship girl.
A serial monogamist?
Then, yeah, I was a serial monogamist from 14.
Wow.
And then I actually, I was in a really serious relationship, one that when I was first met Isaac, I was still in. And then I kind of decided that's not what I wanted. I was, you know, I think I finally ended up breaking up with that a significant other when I was like 25. And then I made a purpose, like I was very intentionally not monogamous after that. And so, because I felt like I went from relationship to relationship, I mean, only a month or two between relationships since I had been 14. And so after I had broken up with that boyfriend, who I'd been with for 4 years or something, I had decided I'm not going to be in a monogamous relationship. And actually, Isaac was the next serious relationship I was in.
When you first moved to Sitka, knowing that Isaac was in a relationship, did that worry you as far as coming here to date? And then what was dating like when you first got here?
I did date a little bit when I first got here, but if it wasn't good, if I had to put in work and it wasn't easy, I was like, and we're done. Hmm. And so I was very much like, I'm not going to force anything. And I kind of just let happen what happened. But I also was not a part of the bar scene at all. And that was a conscious decision on my part too. Because, you know, fishing, being up here, working in the summer, the bar scene is like where you go. As a deckhand, it's like what you do.
Right.
And so when I came up here, you know, I was teaching, and I also, you know, for me, I was like, I don't want to meet people that way. And so I did date, but it was, you know, it was meeting people through friends or through different, it was mostly through friends. And I didn't really date that much, and a lot, and the two people I did date before Isaac up here were both fishermen who are no longer, you know, in town. Like, they were people who left town and are only up here in the summer, or one who's not even up here anymore at all. So I felt like that made it easier, because I see a lot of my friends who date people who are here, and I can't imagine having to see those, you know, I don't know how that would be.
That's interesting, tying back into what Aaron was saying in terms of not wanting to see people around town that you have been in relationships with in the past, and that dictating your behavior in the present. Like, is it worth it to be with this person if I know I'm going to have to, especially if they live here long term? Yeah.
Well, I think that's part of what you were saying, Bridget, by purposely sort of avoiding the bar scene. I mean, you're trying to just kind of maintain control over the sort of the environment in which you're, you know, going to be dating. I think that's probably a pretty good way to go about it.
Yeah.
And, you know, going out to the bars, it's usually like, oh, that person's so funny. And then you see them the next day, or you meet, or you talk to them, and you're like, wow, this person's an idiot. Like, what the heck is wrong with me? And so I didn't want to do that. And I kind of, you know, it's always funny because, and, you know, with Isaac, he was always kind of like, oh, he's here. Like, I even told him when I moved to town, I was like, hey, I'm moving to town. Like, we should hang out. And he was just like, no, I'm really busy. Like, I got to hunt and I got to do this. And, like, it wasn't that he was, like, brushing me off. He just really was busy, you know, and he just didn't think to, you know. And so for me, I don't know, I guess always, it was always him.
Well, he did clear the decks for you eventually. I mean, I think that's the kind of thing that I'm hearing here, is that I am interested in the idea of chemistry, and you guys kind of connected from that moment he pulled into PA. I think your relationship began there, and then I had a friend tell me recently that when two people are ready for a relationship, they'll have a relationship. And gradually, I think both of you guys might have worked towards the same goal. Maybe it wasn't, you know, conscious or not, but you seemed to be on a path that was converging. You were both seeing other people at the time, and you had the strategy, Bridget, about you know, sort of being cautious about you know what to expect from people. And Isaac was busy with his stuff, but he was also dating somebody else, but managed to, you know, not be dating somebody else when you happened to be back to town after 6 or 7 months. It seems like you might have just been sort of pointing towards each other all along.
Yeah, I mean, it really did feel like that. Like, when he, so apparently he was like, he had told me this after we started dating, but he kind of knew that he, you know, when he finally was single for a little bit, he was like, man, where's Bridget? Like, I know she's here somewhere. And because I wasn't going out to the bar, or like, wasn't out socially like that, he never would get to see me. And so one of his friends had worked at the brewery and was like, hey, dude, she's going to be here for this derby thing. You really should, like, come to this thing because it's a derby. And so he did. And that's actually when he was like, hey, we should hang out. Like, what's your phone number? And then, like, after that, it was, we were instantaneously.
Like a house on fire.
Instantaneously a couple, like. There was nothing else, and then we lived, you know, I fished with him every summer, and so I fished with him every summer since then. And so we are instantly, like, living on a 32-foot boat together.
I think that this also brings up an interesting thing that I think about with chemistry, and I think about this with fishing in particular. Context often dictates chemistry, and that the kind of chemistry that you can have with somebody in one context, like, you just couldn't have with them in another context. And, I mean, I've seen this happen so many times where I've developed amazing friendships with people that if I had met them in civilian life, I wouldn't have even been able to have a conversation with them. But because we're working hard together, or because, you know, like you're saying, Bridget, like, he was lonely and maybe less distracted, right? Like, he can actually... I mean, whatever it is that happens out there on the water, I think often allows chemistry between people that wouldn't have chemistry, which is also another good reason for people who are looking for love to go and do things that they wouldn't normally do, because it can, like, stir up something in us and the other person that isn't stirred up in just the course of our normal life.
Another data point, Bridget, that you touched upon that I think could be really helpful for people is, if it doesn't work, don't keep trying. You really vetted people pretty seriously, it sounds like, in the periods when you returned to Sitka and you were dating. And anything that wasn't a yes, you just let it go. You didn't try to turn it into something it wasn't if you weren't excited about that person initially.
Yeah, if he doesn't make me feel like 100% and I don't make him feel like 100% now, when we've just been dating for, like, you know, a year or you know, even like 6 weeks, if you don't feel like this person's making you so awesome, you have to work at it. Man, it's going to be way harder 10 years down the line, you know?
Yeah.
And so I was just like, when you first meet, it should be so easy, because the difficult part, I feel like, is going to be coming.
Bridget, what advice would you give for people who are looking for love on an island? who didn't roll up in a tender... I don't know if I'm getting my terminology right. Who didn't meet people?
Who don't know what
I like that.
That.
I like rolling up in a tender.
rolling up in a tender.
Yeah. Who didn't meet their Isaac when they got to Sitka right away? Who are really struggling to find anyone they want to sit down next to and talk with, let alone marry? What advice would you have for those people?
I think it's hard, to be honest with you. And I think, you know, I've been friends' advice that, like, yeah, you love Sitka, you might need to go somewhere else and find somebody, because you know the whole dating pool. You know, sometimes you just gotta break free.
And you did technically break free. Yeah. You left Boston and you came to Alaska.
Yeah.
So you did leave your environment. You just went to a smaller one, but you did break out.
I think the takeaway here is we need to invite people to Sitka rather than sending people out of Sitka. We need to invite people into Sitka.
That seems like an extremely nefarious reason to invite people to Sitka. We've got lots of lonely single hearts here.
Singles cruise where they just, like, walk up and down.
We need to invite the people from... Well, the thing is, we need to have, like...
Like a candy truck. We're throwing people in single...
We could have, like, all the towns of population 9,000 where people have the same problem. And we could have a big...
A mixer?
Swap.
Yeah,
a big mixer.
Like in middle school?
Yes. That's what we should do.
That'll be show number 4.
There you go.
Bridget, thanks so much for talking with us today.
I'm
tempted to say that, you know, the cliche on the tip of my tongue is, well, Isaac's a lucky man. Then I thought, well, no, you know, Bridget's a lucky woman. But,
I'm so lucky.
But I really don't think luck had anything to do with it. Thanks again, Bridget. Have a good one.
Thank you.
Okay, bye.
I've just seen a face, I can't forget the time or place where we just met. She's just the girl for me, and I want all the world to see we've met. Had it been another day, I might have looked the other way, and I'd have never been aware. But as it is, I'll dream of her tonight. La da 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 da. Falling, yes, I am falling, and G. she keeps calling me back again. I have never known the like.
I think the easiness that Bridget was talking about, I am curious if that easiness is sustainable.
Mm-hmm. That's a good question.
Over the long haul. I mean, because you want it to be easy. You want your relationship to be smooth, but life just throws so many crazy things at you over time.
I'd also like to know if being on an island changes that, because we're in such a small place, some people think that there just isn't much to do and there's just not a lot here. So like in a big city, you're like, let's just go to Rhode Island for the weekend. Or I don't know why I said Rhode Island, but you know what I mean.
Well, let's go to Cruzoff for the weekend here. I mean, we have a lot of stuff to do. That'll be another show.
Keeping the spark alive,
yes,
though.
But let's investigate this question of durability in relationships. Okay. And we have a couple more folks to wrap up our show today. Joining me on the phone are Bill and Nancy. Hi, Bill.
Hi there.
How's it going? Happy Valentine's Day.
Thank you.
I wonder, Bill, how long have you and Nancy been married?
Well, over 50 years. I've lost how many over, but long, half a century.
Congratulations.
Wow.
Thank you. Yes.
Wow. We're all applauding. That is impressive.
Bill, how did you meet Nancy?
Well, I'm going to let Nancy answer that question because we have different memories of how it happened.
Who's right?
She's got the correct story. Oh, yeah.
That is the secret
yes,
to why
we're
they're
learning
married
a lot.
50 years. You can sign off now.
Bill, how have you maintained your relationship over the years when other people ask you that question? Yeah.
Yeah, it involves, I think, a whole lot of different things. It involves an understanding of one another. You have to be willing to make sacrifices. There's mutual enjoyment of things. There's involvement of patience. We have done a lot of traveling together, and I think also, in addition to those properties, in my case, there's been some inertia. It's been easier to stay married than it has been to break up. It's more work to change than to stay as it is. And then, of course, the basis really of a good marriage is love. And you have to be a little bit careful when you talk about love, because love, from my point of view, runs on a scale. It's a continuum. It's a gamut that runs from, animal lust, which is, of course, necessary for a good marriage, because a good sex in an intimate setting is really a basic thing. But love runs from that kind of animal lust, that basic sexual urges, through enjoyment of things together. When you say, you love a pizza or you love matzo balls, you're talking about liking something, appreciation. Friendship is a key thing that I think contributes to it. It's always nice to think that your spouse is a friend, if not the best friend you've got. And then at the other end of the gamut, you've got sacrificial love. I think it ends up with Kierkegaard's concept of agape, where, if the two of you fall in the river and you're able to jump in and save the one person, but you get swept away, that's giving up your life for somebody else's. That, I think, is at the other end of that scale. So you have to have all of those kinds of commitments, the commitment to all of those parts of love, in order to last a long time. So I'm going to hand it now to her, and you can ask her your question.
Oh, Bill, before you hand the phone over to Nancy, let me just say that I'm embarrassed to call myself a love dork after talking with you. You are the
king of the love dork.
You are our we bow down before you. You have got it.
When you talk to people who are younger and newer in relationships, do you, and they may ask you for advice, do you think, I'm just asking because my dad comes back to this, he often thinks that people nowadays make it harder than it is or should be? Do you think that it was easier along the way, or do you think that you and Nancy just have such a great thing?
Well, I think the shifting sexual mores have, you know, kind of changed the emphasis along that continuum that I was talking about. That there seems to be much more emphasis on the physical end of you know, casual sex and stuff like that. And you know, in the good old days when we were getting married, you know, you were supposed to be a virgin when you got married. Nobody necessarily was, but that was the ideal. And so I think that I think that sort of loosening of the societal mores has contributed to a lot more of the physical sex. And the other thing is, people, I don't think, make commitments the way we were brought up to make commitments. We were brought up that when you said that this was, you know, something that was, I pledge you my troth until death. And that's kind of a commitment that requires some loyalty. And I seem to feel that people don't make those kind of commitments nowadays, or aren't willing to. It takes some will to make a commitment like that.
Yeah, bringing will and intention into love, that's important. I think we should discuss that at some point.
Is Nancy there?
Yes, she is. Would you like to talk to her?
Yes.
Sure.
Thanks, Bill.
Hi, Nancy. This is Emily.
Oh, hi, Emily.
Hi.
Are you the one that was asking Bill?
We want to know how you and Bill met.
Oh, did he tell you?
He said you had the more accurate version.
Oh, how nice of him. Yes, okay. We had both heard of each other before we met, but I didn't know he had heard of me.
Where were you living?
Well, we were living in Anchorage. I was on the faculty of Alaska Methodist University in 1960. And in the spring of 61, I heard about a Bill Davis, and there was another Bill that was coming on the faculty the next fall. And, of course, my ears perked up. I was not having a very successful time meeting interesting men in Anchorage at that time. Skiing, yes. When I came back up the highway the summer of 61, when I came towards the lobby of Alaska Methodist University, I had heard that Bill Davis had arrived, but I kind of forgot, and I walked through those doors, and there across the hallway we saw each other, and I don't remember anything else about our meeting at that time.
Chemistry.
Wait, was there chemistry?
I would say not at that time. I was very shy, and I think we both felt like we were not. Well, I felt like I was over the hill. I was 25 years old at that time, got married at 26. And in the 50s, you were supposed to go to college and meet somebody and be pinned by the time you graduated, or, you know, very soon after.
Get your MRS degree.
Yes, that was the whole spirit. And I was too much of a student, and I was too shy. And I had one date, I think, in 2 years at Lewis and Clark College.
Oh, dear.
And I really kind of felt my family giving up on me. I know my older sister asked me how much weight had I lost. And, of course, I was eating ice cream and bags of cookies. And who was I dating? And I wasn't dating anyone. I was just studying. Then I think maybe Bill's family kind of given up on him, too. And we were very shy. There were a couple other professors that were single, but they were more weird than Bill.
A girl's got to have her standards, right?
Yes.
Well, I remember walking down the hall and seeing the other guys. There was just absolutely nothing there. But by Thanksgiving, he invited me to go over to St. Mary's Episcopal Church to have Thanksgiving dinner with good friends of his, the priest and his family, and they had three kids, the Zabriskies. There were three at that time. They had two more later. And I remember seeing Bill playing on the floor with those little kids, and they were just so happy. They were having a wonderful time. And I thought, I know and I recall thinking, I want to have that man's children. But I'll never forget the first time he held my hand in his Jeep as we drove off campus. One, it was wonderful to have him hold my hand. That was a big deal in those days.
Nancy, I think Bill came across as a very romantic guy. He seemed to understand the full spectrum of love.
Uh-huh.
And I wonder what, in your opinion, you know, you guys, I think the expression at the time, you know, might have made, you know, beautiful music together. But how do you turn something like that into kind of a lifelong duet? What's the formula to this kind of lifetime relationship, in your opinion?
Well, it changes all the time, from that initial enthusiasm to, oh, my God, am I stuck in this the rest of my life, to three children, each of whom kind of validate the marriage in new ways. I'd say even now I feel a changing relationship with Bill from last January, when I thought I wasn't going to be able to live with him anymore, to now when we hold hands. And it's charming. I really find that lovely. Did he say that?
He had plenty of good things to say.
Okay. Anyway, I think it's a series of accidents and a tremendous amount of effort on the part of everyone. Oh, gosh, I wrote some stuff here I couldn't possibly write. I mean, speak. It's not appropriate.
What is it? No. You have to tell us.
No, I.
Is it scandalous?
Just tell us one inappropriate
thing. I get carried away.
What is it?
Well, I put it aside now.
You could.
No, I can't do this.
What is it about, Nancy? You don't have to tell us what it is.
I just got to thinking about the human capacity to be bored is a curse. If we could all be equally dumb and bored, we probably would get along pretty well together. Minimally, but okay. Mm-hmm. That's pretty. I was thinking of humanity, not Bill and I. But I think keeping things lively and doing different things, and somehow, even as we're slowing down, there's no question that we're partners and we really like each other. Mm-hmm. And I like him better than anybody else I've ever met. And I'm sure that no one else could put up with me for the length of time. What is it, 54 years this year? Yeah.
How are you and Bill plan to get through this next phase of your life together?
Oh, as we slowly die?
That's one way of putting it.
Oh, yes. But, well, you know, I've had such an interesting life, Emily, that I could kick the bucket tomorrow and don't feel badly. Mm-hmm. I've done so many interesting things, and I am fading. A lot of our relationship is that we were both very active for a long time. Now we can... Well, we hold hands more, don't we? How are we going to face death? Those are wonderful questions. They're dreadful questions. We're good at avoiding them, but we've done pretty well addressing them. I'm pretty ready. I don't want to be resuscitated. So if I kick the bucket, out in the woods or just walking downtown, it's okay.
Hey, Nancy, you've given us some real insight between you and Bill. We've talked about will, intention, and now...
Holding hands, the importance of holding hands.
And also looking at the real meaning of the to death do us part aspect of that phrase.
And the challenge that brings, different times of one's life.
All right. Nancy, thanks so much for meeting the Love Dorks today.
Oh, yes. It sounds like an interesting program. Oh, Bill wants to say something.
Oh, yeah, by all means.
I think Nancy should be queen of the Love Dorks.
She is the queen.
Yes.
Oh, come on now. Cheers for your ideas and for your courage in asking these questions and getting us to think about them. Bye now.
Cheers.
Here's Bill.
Well, as I listened to her, it occurred to me how spectacularly lucky we have been to share some adventures together. Those shared adventures, I think, really not only were enriched us individually, but really did help to cement our relationship.
Yeah, well, cement, is a mixture of various...
Many things.
Many things, and whatever it is, you guys seem to have the right cement. And the Love Dorks salute you.
And wish you a happy Valentine's Day.
Oh, yes. Happy Valentine's Day to everybody. And thanks for this fun time, okay?
Thanks, Bill. Thanks, have a good day.
Bye, Bill. Thank you.
Love Dorks, I think we encountered the unexpected today.
I feel like I just went through an entire relationship between Aaron and Bridget.
It is. I feel.
And Bill and
I feel like yeah. I feel exhausted.
The trajectory.
Yeah. Meet the Love Dorks is actually going to become a podcast here at Raven Radio. It's not going to be airing regularly on our airwaves, but you'll be able to subscribe to Meet the Love Dorks through iTunes. If you'd like to get in touch with us, if you have an idea, or if you'd like to be a guest on our show and have us talk about your relationship issues, you can send an email to meetthelovedorks@gmail.com.
We have an email account?
Yes, meetthelovedorks@gmail.com.
So breaking news.
And we'll get in touch with you because there are just so many ways that this all unfolds. And I mean, you can go about it with, you know, not having an outcome in mind, which is sort of what we suggested with Aaron. And then you have the Nancys of the world who look at somebody and say, I want to have children with mm-hmm. that person. And so, yeah, there's no right. There's no wrong. There just is the dorky feeling of trying.
I'd really also like to offer our services to those of you listening who have a love question you want us to investigate, such as polyamory, what's that all about? Or why isn't this person calling me back? If you just want us to apply our journalistic, scientific, quasi-economic brains to these problems, we will investigate for you so you won't have to live and wonder anymore.
And if you want to know why we call the show Meet the Love Dorks, Emily just answered it right there. We're not ashamed to try and send some data your way.
To nerd out over these questions.
Yeah. It's not always science, but it is facts.
We're like the Scooby-Doo gang of the heart. That's so cheesy.
Anyways,
did you say ruh-roh?
Ruh-roh, yeah. Thanks for joining us on Meet the Love Dorks. I'm Rob.
I'm Tammy.
I'm Emmett.
And I'm Emily.
And we are the Love Dorks. Have a great Valentine's Day, everybody.